could, for the record, go ahead.
Right, I will. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'm Frank Ruth, Commissioner of the Department of Fish and Game, and I have with me at the table Kevin Brooks, the Director of my Division of Administration. Also in the audience is Tracy Kramer from the Oil Spill Office and Dale Anderson from Limited Entry Commission, if you happen to have questions on either of those two programs. Jaron Bruce is also here. I hope all of you have got the program overview that I handed out.
I think everybody should have it.
Okay. I assume we have about half an hour, is that correct, Mr. Chairman? Roughly. Okay, what I'd like to do, I just got the series of questions that you wanted to make sure we covered, so I'll try and do that at the end. I had a couple of prepared remarks. I wanted to walk through the first few pages of this handout.
Sure.
And then I'll get to some of the questions as best I can on the fly. As the governor said in his State of the Budget speech, the shape of the budget is as important as the size in many ways. And I think in putting together our budget with the governor, the main issues that we were looking at is the importance of fish and game to the economy of the state and the well-being of the people in the state. I guess many of you were here last year, so I won't repeat it in a lot of detail, but fish and game provides, through the commercial fisheries in our state, the largest employer of the state, as well as employment spread throughout the state. Obviously, sport fishing has become a more and more important now in the economic activity, but also activity for residents of the state, as has sport hunting and guiding. Tourism, a lot of that is focused around hunting and fishing and viewing of wildlife. So for all those reasons, and given some of the general fund cuts we've sustained over the past few years, the governor's budget is basically a status quo budget, general fund budget, with some slight increases for salary adjustment. Let me go through, if you will, starting on page one of, or actually page two of the overview book I've given you. If you look at the mission statement, I think probably you may be familiar, our basic mission is to manage, protect, maintain, improve the fish and game and aquatic plant resources of Alaska. And I think that was written in 1959, and I think it's a pretty good summary of what we're trying to do as a department. Also, in 1959, the sustained yield principle is written into our Constitution, and that's a fundamental charge that we have in managing the resources of the state. If you look on that first page, you'll see the basic organization of the department: commissioner, two deputies, and six divisions. As I said, we provide the management of the resources that are critical to not only the largest employer in the state, but also over 100,000 hunters and 500,000 sport anglers in Alaska. So tremendously and growing, a tremendously important and growing use of our resources. I've listed here some of the main issues sort of in our overview that I see we are going to have to face in the coming year. Some of them have been with us for a while. As you look at that page, the first one is dual subsistence management. Right now the federal government is managing wildlife on federal lands, subsistence use of wildlife on federal lands. You all are probably aware of some of the efforts to take over fisheries. There's a moratorium on that effort. We are resisting that effort in the courts. However, it is a continuing problem, a continuing issue. It is making our life more difficult in a number of ways. One, administratively, you now have to deal with two systems, so does the public. There's greater danger of resources being over-harvested, greater dangers of opportunity being lost for no good reason, and further polarization of the public that uses our fish and wildlife. So that's an issue that I hope the legislature will work with the governor to address as we strive to get management of our fish and game resources under state management. I think we'll all be better off if we can do that. The other point I mentioned, issue that we face, is increased demand on our resources. As I said, there are more sport fishing licenses being sold, more hunting licenses being sold, more tourists coming to Alaska to see our fish and wildlife. There's just increasing demand for the use of our resources. An example is I think we issued 36,000 permits for Nelchina caribou this year. Tremendous, tremendously popular program. Another huge issue we've got facing us is the salmon market. Farm fish around the world is really is now outproducing Alaska salmon. We caught about 175 million salmon last year. The farms around the world produce more than that. This is tough competition. I was in the Skiji market in Tokyo, and when you see that fresh fish coming in from Chile and Norway, you can see why our fishermen are having a tough time competing. The industry, for the first time, I believe, is getting together from all sectors are getting together from all regions of the state. The hatcheries, the fishermen, and the processors at a forum here in Juneau at the end of this month to start talking about some serious practical things we can do to help address the salmon problem. We've been doing things in the past year, things like helping Cape Tribal get Pelican Seafoods going, things like that. So we've been working with the industry, but for the first time, the industry in all sectors, see, they have to work cooperatively rather than fighting each other to try and address some of these world market problems we've got. And we'll be working with them. Turning to page 4, you can see allocation disputes continue to be difficult issues. The department has to provide information to the boards of fish and game and also interact with a federal subsistence board to try and keep that process honest. We've got U.S.-Canada fisheries disputes, which are threatening our use of resources here in Southeast and in actually South Central if we're not careful. Some of the goals I've listed on the sidebar there of this this page that I see the department working towards this year in particular, but also as an ongoing effort. One is regaining state management of our fish and game resources. That is a fundamental priority, that if we don't do that, things are only going to get worse in every sector of our fish and wildlife resources. Looking towards cooperative management of fish and wildlife, working with other entities that are gathering information so that we stretch our dollars and also have a better understanding of the needs of the various users out there. As I say, meeting the increased demands, continuing in our habitat division to give timely permits so that other users of the land get out there and develop other resources while maintaining our fish and wildlife. And finally, working with industry to open up some new fisheries and look at ways of getting more information for existing fisheries. A couple of last points I guess I'd like to point out here. In looking at the funding history, it tells, there's an interesting story in that chart on page 4. You'll see our general funds have been going steadily down. Our fish and game funds, which are the license revenues, and our federal dollars have been going up. Now the importance of that will be a little bit clearer in a minute, but basically those federal and fish and game funds are restricted in their use. The general funds are the funds we can use for commercial fisheries management, and some of the programs which do not qualify under the federal dollars and the fish and game funds. So that's a significant chart, and I'll dwell on that a little bit here in a minute. I've listed the 5-year funding history of these different funding sources on the next chart, just to give you a sense of kind of the direction of these different funding sources. One of the points I think we've tried to make, and I think the folks in the fishing industry and the hunters and the sport fishermen will tell you, is that they pay for management of their resource. And I think if you look at this chart, it's pretty clear. And this is not just the Department of Fish and Game. This is all state government, whether it's Commerce and Economic Development or DEC doing inspections or Fish and Game doing management or enforcement doing enforcement. This chart on the sidebar here shows that basically fish and wildlife users pay for management of their resource. And we can get into that if you'd like. Finally, we talk a little bit about the importance of having a quality management program. I think one of the things I've noticed, and I'll also mention this again, I've been down to a couple of conferences and meetings on some of the international fisheries issues, since they're starting to mess in our business with Endangered Species Acts and salmon stocks that are disappearing in the lower 48 that rear up here, and also in the treaty negotiations. I thought we ought to pay a little attention to it and go down and tell our story. And what you find out is that our management program, while it still has problems and we're not doing everything we should be doing, is the envy of the rest of the world. They can't believe it when I tell them that we have area management biologists who actually make decisions real time in the field, instead of someone sitting in Ottawa or Washington, D.C., actually making the decisions when to open a fishery or when to close a fishery. It's just mind-boggling. We take some of these things for granted, and it's one of the reasons we've got healthy resources up here. So that's what I mean by a quality management program. This chart on page 6 again shows that, relatively speaking, our general funds are lower than they were in 1979. You can see some of our other funding sources have gone up since then, and that shows how the balance in our programs have changed. Let me also get to the pie charts on page 7 just quickly. This shows all funds and the size of the different divisions. If you look at all of our funds, you'll see the Commercial Fisheries and Management Division is about 41%. Then Sport Fish is next, about 19%. Wildlife's next, about 17%. Habitat's about 11%. That includes its oil spill office. That's why that is as large as it is. About half of that is probably the oil spill office. Then you see an administration division that's about 4%, subsistence 3%, limited entry 3% of the budget, commissioner's office and public communications about 1%, and boards is about 1%. That's the whole department. If you look at our general funds only, which is the significant, the next pie chart below, you'll see Comfish is 75% of our general funds. And this gets back at the issue I was talking about earlier, where federal funds and fish and game license fees, we can't use those for managing our commercial fisheries. So our general funds principally go to managing commercial fisheries. You'll see limited entry is about 6% of the general funds. They're basically program receipts. They actually bring in about twice as much money as they spend doing their adjudications. Habitat's a small percentage of the general fund, subsistence, admin, boards, commissioner's office. Wildlife gets a little tiny bit, and I'll be talking about that in a minute. Or perhaps in subcommittee, and Sport Fish gets a tiny bit basically for employee housing rent. So general funds, if you look at limited entry and Comm Fish, it's over 80% of our general funds is in fisheries management and limited entry. I've listed on the sidebar there how the users pay. Let me get to the budget request, and then I'll finish this overview. It's only the first 11 pages of the general stuff, and then we get into the division summaries. If you look at our overall budget, all funding sources, it's about a $1.4 million increase from this fiscal year. I've looked at, basically, that includes the reasons for this are the negotiated labor contract, shows some increase in salaries. We are looking at test fish and other program receipts, possible increases. And the other major increases are in the federal and fish and game fund, sport fish and wildlife conservation areas. The general fund, on the sidebar, I've summarized those. If you look, overall budget increase, the 1.488 is broken down into various pieces. We were seeing a significant decrement in Exxon Valdez. We see our participation there going down. Fish and Game Fund increase of 2.2, that's divided between sport fish and wildlife conservation for increased management programs, a little bit of enforcement for sport fish. Program receipts is Comm Fish and a little bit for subsistence division with the university, I believe. Federal funds, again, is sport fish and wildlife conservation. The general fund, the $370,000 increase is all salary increase, basically the contracts that were negotiated. And I say the EVOS decrement of $2.3 million. If you look at our overall funding sources on that sidebar again, you can go down. We're about 30%, 31% general funds for our department. About 30% federal funds. About 19% fish and game funds, which is license fees, permit tag fees, trapping fees. And Exxon Valdez is about oil spill management, is about 10%, includes the projects we do as well. Program receipts, about 7% of our budget, and 3% is miscellaneous, which is interagency receipts, oil and hazardous response fund, and CIP receipts, which are listed in this chart. This chart summarizes the last 4 years of our funding, and if you added all these up, you basically get what's in that sidebar, the percentage breakdown in that sidebar. Finally, as an overview, one of the things that's really important to the department that tells you about the department is, two, the kind of staffing we have, and that's listed on the top of page 10, and the location of the staffing. Less than half the department is permanent full-time positions. We really have over half is a seasonal workforce, either permanent, part-time, or seasonal workforce, that when we have our big, when our fisheries are going on in the summer, we hire a lot of part-time people to help us manage those fisheries. So our department really consists of a lot of seasonal and part-time work. Also, we have a lot of area offices, some of which are tiny, you know, one-person seasonal offices. I believe that spread of people around the state is critical to successfully managing fish and game and having access to people as well as the resource and being responsive to people as well as the resource. Let me just close my prepared remarks with the 4 points that are made on the sidebar on page 11. Mm-hmm. And again, this was re-emphasized when I've been down to the lower 48 and seen how they've squandered some of their resources and Canada. And unfortunately, we're reaping the benefits of their choices down there because they are restricting our ability to harvest resources up here because of some of the choices they made down there. But these 4 points have been re-emphasized in my mind as I've seen the mistakes they've made elsewhere. To be successful in managing our fish and wildlife for the benefit of people, we have to do 4 things. We have to have good science. We have to have good on-the-ground, real-time management where the responsibility is with the area biologists who know what's going on right then. We have to protect our habitats. We have the base, we have the factory to produce the resources, and we have to have the public involved in our not only management in season through things like the Kuskokwim Working Group, where we talk to the fishermen in season about openings, or Bristol Bay, or, you know, we're keeping the fishermen informed of what we're doing, and through the board process. We have to be able to do that, or the public will not have, one, an understanding or faith in how we're managing our resources, and we will not do as good a job for them. So that's my overview. Just so you know what's in the rest of the report, each division has summarized their main issues, their organization, and their budget, so that you can go through and see what changes each division is proposing in their budget and some of the issues they see facing them this season. At the very end, you'll also see the Limited Entry Commission summary for them and their budget. So that's what I've got in the overview. If you'd like, I can now go to the questions you've asked and then I'll try and respond to some of the questions you've got in the handout, and then you can ask me questions.
Why don't you do that? Just spend just a couple minutes going through that, and then we'll ask a couple questions.
Okay. basically, as a 197 budget, number of filled positions deleted, if any, none. We don't see any lapses or supplementals requests. Some of the efficiencies we've introduced, and this is just kind of going off the top of my head since we did have budget reductions over the last few years, we have been partnering with not only industry but also other groups, for instance, to do surveys on salmon surveys. AVCP will have a weir. Fish and Wildlife Service may be gathering data on fish. All three of us will get together and make sure we're gathering data that we can use. And we can use in season, we can give to the board. So that and getting industry to help with test fish. With developing fisheries, you may have read a little bit about the sea cucumber effort down here where actually the processors donated money to help with management. So, you know, we're doing some of those kinds of things. We're using computers to get more efficient about how we do our business. Habitats doing hundreds more permits a year than they used to with less money, and part of that's getting more efficient. And actually, they're doing about the same amount of time. They're also losing some field time, which is the unfortunate part of that. Subsistence is closing an office. We'll be closing the Clear Hatchery and producing those fish out of Fort Rich, which is more efficient for us. So we're trying to do things like that. Mm. Cost savings, that would cover some of those cost savings. Kevin might give you a RIP update, if that's okay.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Kevin Brooks, Director of Administrative Services for the Department. We put together a RIP plan for the Department last fall and took a fairly narrow focus. Our concern was that we'd be able to document savings and produce real savings, and so one of the criteria that the Commissioner and the Directors as a group got together and determined that in our department it would be necessary to delete or reclassify downward any position for it to participate. And part of our rationale on that was that we have a very much a career-oriented workforce in our department, and replacements often will occur at advanced steps, and so it's hard to show savings if you just, you know, refill, say, a FP3 at an 18. And so we met with a lot of resistance and criticism among some of our staff members who thought it might be a little more liberally applied, but this was the one way we felt we could responsibly document savings. And so we ended up with 24 individuals that fit the category, and they cross all of our funding sources. We had a window that closed on December 31st. We received 4 waivers. So we still have 20 applicants in the pool, and they have until May 1 would be the deadline for someone to go. And right up until that date, an individual could decide to change their mind. But we have at least 20 people right now who have indicated a desire to participate passed up their opportunity to submit a waiver to the program. And in fact, we've had a handful that have already retired December and during the month of January. But many of them will wait until May 1st. And we use May strategically because our field season will be kicking in April and May. And so we wanted to have a clear indication before we got into our field season who would be going, who we'd need to replace for training and so forth. So I have numbers on the total program. We estimated if all 24 people went, we would see approximately $1.5 million savings over 3 years. And I want to emphasize it's not necessarily GF savings because we had Fish and Game and federal funded employees in the pool. I haven't gone back and recalculated based on the 20. And so we would be able to cover some of that with the subcommittee, perhaps, if that would be acceptable. But
thank you. Representative Mulder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, what's the department's general viewpoint on initiatives that are placed on the ballot? Does the department take a position on initiatives?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mulder, the department generally does not take positions on initiatives. I think if we had a preference, we think that the Board of Game, Board of Fish process is the best way to manage fish and wildlife. It's the most specific with the most information in front of the people making decisions and or the legislature, where again you can have the debate discussion. So as a general rule, that's our preference.
Did you take a position on the fish initiative?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mulder, the governor and the department took a position on the fish initiative. Since it was unconstitutional, we felt that it was probably not appropriate to support an initiative that was shown to be unconstitutional and was an allocation of...
It seems to me, Commissioner, you took a position long before a judge determined that proposal to be unconstitutional.
Well, Mr. Chair, you don't necessarily have to wait for a judge to determine that something is not constitutional in your own reading of how the resources are supposed to be allocated. I mean, that was the position was that we didn't think it was appropriate to allocate resources by initiative, that that was not the way the law was set up.
It's not fair to give the people what they want.
Mr. Chairman, it's fair to give the people what they want. We feel the board and the legislature are the appropriate ways to do it.
Who do you work for?
Mr. Chairman, we work for the people, and if it's legal, initiatives are fine, and that's why we're neutral on initiatives in general. If they're not legal, or we don't think it's the way the law is set up to deal with the issue, then we take a position on it.
I found it ironic, Mr. Chairman, the department chose to take a position on the fish initiative, but remained uniquely silent on the wolf initiative, which they internally said was going to make a big problem for them in terms of management, and yet they said nothing in public or took a vocal position, such as they did with the fish initiative. Following along that line, Commissioner, one of the problems I believe that we're experiencing is the fact that the Board of Fish is distant from the legislature as well as from the people. And one of the recommendations that's emerged is that the Board of Fish actually have a hearing or a meeting down here to meet with legislators. As we actually end up going out there, we're part of where the rubber hits the road. We're meeting with our constituents, and we're expressing viewpoints and concerns that they reflect to us. Would you favor or support such an effort? And would you, if you do, work to try and make certain that happens?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mulder, I think I understand you're suggesting that the legislature and the board have a hearing or a discussion of issues, conversation, if you will.
Yes.
I think that kind of effort could be useful.
Part of my concern, Mr. Chairman, is the fact that after visiting with a number of board members, they have a lot of concerns or problems or questions that drive during an overview or during hearings that they have, and the department doesn't have an answer, and a large amount of finger pointing goes on, but the issues remain unresolved, and we never hear about it. The department never brings forth the concern that's being reflected by the board, saying we need more money or more assistance, more information in this area. Hence, it falls in the gap, and I think it would be helpful if we actually heard directly from the respective boards to hear what their concerns are and what their needs are, so that we can actually work together to try and satisfy the needs of the people that we represent.
Representative Mulder, I just mentioned we obviously have the ability to request them to come before us for a hearing. And I don't know if it's appropriate if you're looking at finance or whether you'd prefer DNR or resources to have an overview of the process. But I'd be happy to work with you on. Obviously, if we request them to come, they would probably show up. So that's clearly available. Representative Terrio, then Martin, then Coring.
Thank you. Commissioner, I've been trying to track down the federal monies that come into the state for the Alaska Coastal Management Program. And the money is funneled through the Division of Governmental Coordination. And in their budget documentations for fiscal year 98, they show the money flowing through Community and Regional Affairs for the actual coastal zone districts out around the state of Alaska. That's a little bit over $1 million. And then it has a category of RSAs to state agencies for core services and participation in the ACMP. That also is a little over $1 million. And I tried to match that up to see if you had a funding category here. And I'm wondering if you can tell me how much of the $1,054,000 fishing game receives.
Yeah, Representative Terrio, I'll let Kevin Brooks answer that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Terrio, we have those funds would come through our Habitat Division, and we have interagency receipts in Habitat is what it would be, and we have $982,000 authorized in our request, but they're not all for that source. And our revenue detail would show the breakdown for that program, and certainly could get that for them.
Yeah.
That would be the absolute ceiling, because that's the extent of their IA receipt authority, and that's the only place in the department those funds would come through.
Yeah, if
you get you that breakdown of exactly how much.
Okay. Representative Martin.
Yes, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I really like the way you break down the book here, especially when you break down all the unit of revenue. That helped me a lot, and it makes me realize that at least your department realizes you don't live just on general fund, but it's all the units. Funded in the Fish and Game Funds and the increase of $2.2 million, which I don't mind, I believe, in people paying for the services. But that's a considerable jump over the experience you've had in the other years. Is there some increase in fees or expectation of users?
Mr. Chair, Representative Martin, basically what that represents is between the Sport Fish Division, it's split between Sport Fish and Wildlife. And in wildlife conservation, the large percentage of it is the funding that was last year given to the division in the capital budget. We're proposing those same projects be in the operating budget. So that's a large percentage. It shows up right now in the capital budget this year, and we're suggesting that it move back to the operating. So that's the big, that's I think 1.3 million of that is roughly that wildlife division moving from capital to operating. So it's not a huge increase in the services we're delivering today, but today it's in the mix between capital and operating. In Sport Fish, they're asking for a little over $500,000 increased services. And I can break down the detail, but that's for a bunch of, to deal with some increased effort and demand, but also in enforcement. We're proposing an RSA with public safety for about $100,000 for Sport Fish on the Kenai, about four seasonal enforcement officers, so they could be down on the Kenai during the height of the season to take care of some of the issues that we've been hearing about. That's one of them. I think there's a Juneau king crab increment where we've seen a huge effort down here. Kenai Dolly Varden, tremendous increased effort on Dolly Varden. So we need more information on the Kenai. So it's those. That's where we have some increased activity, say, in Sport Fish.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's really nice how you break that down with each unit once you give page 9 to general, and then you break it down for unit. Appreciate that.
Representative Corey?
I just wanted to say thanks, Eldon, for your comments earlier, and that I do reflect your concerns as well. What I see as having happened over the last couple of years is a lot of frustrated sports fishermen coming to state officials, you folks, us, saying we want something done. We want more fish in our rivers, and that hasn't happened. You know, the governor campaigned on that point in 94. I was there at the Matsu Resort at this big sports fish conference that we had there, and he proclaimed that he was going to put more fish in our rivers. That was October of 94. And here we sit almost 3 years later without more fish in our rivers. I visited the Chewett River Lodge this summer. I've seen more problems in the Matsu Valley where it's an issue of, in my view, restricting the commercial catch, that they're being granted emergency openings and they're being granted much more of the share of the fish, and the Matsu and other areas in South Central Alaska are really hurting by this. I guess the point I'm leading up to is I see the Fish and Game as having a responsibility to adhere to the will of the public, and they certainly spoke loud and clear with an initiative that had over 25,000 signatures on it, so I wanted to express that concern to you. And then secondly, I also look at the budget here in your book and the dollars that people in the sports fishing industry are paying through their user fees, sports fish licensing fees, king salmon stamps, $10.2 million, if I understand this correctly, that would equate to about 10% of the entire state portion of the Fish and Game budget. Yet if you look on the bottom of page 7 there, in that little pie chart there, the sports fish allocation is 1% compared to 75% for the commercial side of it. So I'm a little concerned that maybe we're raising a lot of money through the sport fishing fees that are being raised, and we're not getting but just a tiny share of that money to help enhance the sports fish industry. Perhaps you can address that second point.
Mr. Chair, Representative Coring, let me just, on the first point, the department represents all users, and the Board of Fish, and I think it's a good, the idea of having citizens decide how to allocate fish is a good idea. The state of Washington just did a referendum to change their system away from having a bureaucrat such as myself choose among the users, and they have now a citizen board. I think that's great. I think that's where the allocation decision should be made. And the department represents all users. Now, in terms of the chart on page 7, this is general funds only. The Sport Fish Division is basically 19% of our overall budget, almost 20%, and their programs are funded primarily by, or almost entirely by, license fees, king salmon stamps, those kinds of things. The general funds that go to Comfish, the general funds you see for sport fish are very minor. Now, what we have to look at is the relationship between our commercial fish management and our sport fish management. I've worked hard, very hard, and the divisions work very hard to coordinate their management so that it's not a line in the sand that Comfish only thinks about fish for commercial fish. They manage the saltwater commercial fisheries to achieve the allocations that the board sets for the rivers and also escapements. So the management of the fleets out there is intended to get the number of fish in the river that we need for sustained yield, for sport fishermen, for subsistence, and for commercial fishing. And they also will manage to make sure that the allocations that the Board of Fish has set up are met. So there's a close coordination between the two divisions. On the Kenai, for instance, the sport fish division is running a sonar. They'll tell Comfish what the counts are. The two staffs are meeting together constantly to make sure that it's a integrated management program from saltwater through all the fisheries to the sport fisheries and onto the spawning grounds. So the funding sources show how we pay for it, but it doesn't necessarily reflect how we work real time, day to day, as to meet the allocation and sustained yield needs.
Representative Davies.
Thank you. One minor issue in the overall, the budget summaries from the governor's summary and the legislature agree, but your summary in terms of the FY97 numbers off by several hundred million dollars. So just, if maybe you could just look at that.
FY98 or
100,000.
I said 100
million.
I'm sorry. I'm flipping back and forth between millions and thousands there. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
My question though had to do on in the governor's summary. You indicated that you felt that the complex allocation issues were increasing, but yet your resources that were available to deal with those allocation issues were not adequate. Could you talk more about that? Where do those resources go? Why are they important? How do they affect these kinds of decisions?
Let me give you a perfect, Representative Davies. I'll answer your second question first because I'll remember it better. And it also gets to the last question I just answered. Here's a perfect example of Cook Inlet. We had Exxon Valdez monies to do genetics work for a while to look and see if that more precise management could help the recovery of species. That money went away last year. Well, we actually still had it last year. But it helped us deal with that Russian River late Russian sockeye situation, where the sport fish division was seeing a poor return of the late Russian fish. We could ask the Comfish genetics people, where are these fish? Are they out in the commercial fishery? Are they in river? And through that genetics work, we were able to tell that it wasn't worth closing the whole Kenai River to sport fishing because there's only 1 in 10 of those fish were late Russian fish. And it wasn't worth touching the commercial fishery because there were so few of those late Russian River fish still out in the inlet that we were able to just close the mouth of the Russian River for a little while and not reduce opportunity of sport fishermen or commercial fishermen. That is the kind of thing that we cannot do this year. That money's gone. We don't have money to replace it. We will not be able to manage as precisely in Cook Inlet to limit to provide maximum opportunity to push the envelope, if you will, without risking the resource. So now we're going to have to be a little more conservative if we see a problem. You know, we may be able to guess that there are only Russian River fish there or not, but it's that kind of ability. There's an example, and it's an example that Representative Coring raised of how do you coordinate your management. You know, there was a case where the Comfish division with an RSA did some work for the sport fish division to make sure we limited our opportunities as little as possible. But it's that kind of thing that we won't be able to do.
Specifically on that, could you talk a little bit, the same similar kind of example, what your abilities are or not with respect to the Area M and Yukon River escape?
Representative Davies, that is a pretty general question. Can you be a little more specific?
I'm concerned that because we don't understand the mixed stock situation well enough, that we're not managing optimally on the Yukon River.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, Representative Davies, we have a general idea of which chums are going through that Area M fishery when. You know, we know when the fall chums and the summer chums from the Kuskokwim and Yukon are going through there. The problem is figuring out exactly how many are there in Area M at what time and what effect that then has on, say, a small system in Norton Sound. And I don't know that we'll ever have enough money to do that, but that is the kind of issue that at this point we have, you know, we don't have the ability to refine our information on exactly how many fish are in the Area M fishery from each of those stocks. It's hard to take a large mixed stock complex and figure out exactly how many are, say, from a Norton Sound stream.
Thank you. Representative Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. Maybe,
Kevin, did you want to add another question?
Just one question. There is a difference in the numbers between some of the documents you see, and what we try to do with our overview, since we just finished it, was include RPLs that have been through LBNA this year. And so it's about $350,000 difference attributable to RPLs, program receipt type items.
Representative Davies.
Commissioner, I think it's to me it's kind of obvious when you go around the country and get praises and kudos for the management policies and practices that we have in Alaska, since fishing is surviving and thriving in Alaska, and it's fallen flat on its face in many other areas around the country. And I think it's probably due to the success of the management practices with your research and surveys and things. I think you're more able to talk to the fish than a legislator is to find out, you know, what's proper management or not. So I'd like to just compliment you and keep you on a path of proper management that works. And if it works, we don't need to mess with it.
Davies. Well, as I said to everybody else, we'll have subcommittees probably in the middle of next week and let you know who's chairing it, who's on it, and schedule those meetings at that point. So. No other questions. Thank you, Commissioner and Kevin. And we'll adjourn our meeting for today. Tomorrow we start again with, we've got revenue, commerce, labor, and CNRA. So we're adjourned for today. Yeah.